Guardian Unlimited.
Welcome to Comment is Free from the Conservative Party Conference. I'm Georgina Henry, and today we're in the Winter Gardens in Blackpool, tucked behind the stalls in the ballroom foyer, where delegates swarm for refreshments and gossip. On today's programme, we'll be hearing from our top Comment is Free bloggers. Martin Kettle assesses George Osborne's speech, Jenny Russell wonders how the Tories can fix our so-called broken society, and Tony Juniper worries about the Tories' green agenda. Plus, we'll take your Comment is Free questions like this.
Hi, my name's Michael, and I want to ask David Cameron, what will he do about Britain's relationship with the European Union?
And this.
I'd like to ask, would a Conservative government, if they won power, repeal the ID Cards Act 2006?
And discuss them later in the programme. But first, let me introduce you to our panel. With me round the table is The Guardian's chief leader writer Julian Glover, writer Anne Perkins, and Peter Oborne, columnist for the Daily Mail. Peter, how have the Tories cope this week with the constant speculation about an election hanging over them?
It's brought them together, I would have thought. It's meant that the week was not about a kind of great soul-searching about which direction they might go in or not go in. On the other hand, they've had to concentrate their minds very rapidly on the likelihood of a general election, which we speculate will be called next week. And so on the upside, it's been much more unified and much more loyal than one would have expected. On the downside, they've felt a need to put out announcements much faster than they would have wanted to do.
Mm. And that's really changed the conference a bit. I mean, I felt almost, Julian, as if this conference programme, they were busily trying to sort of, you know, scrap bits, add extra bits and redirect speeches this week.
Absolutely. I think it's been very good for David Cameron. He's been able to look like he's leading a party into a campaign rather than a party that's beginning to worry about its direction and its leader. But I think maybe it hasn't quite struck everybody how likely an election is. I had dinner last night with a couple of Tory MPs in marginal seats, and I said to them, are you printing your leaflets? And they looked and they said, what, do you really think it's going to happen? I said, it looks like it is. And they were still not certain.
Yeah.
And his majority, the one of the people I was talking to, not very big, he looked quite frightened, worried he might lose that seat.
Mm.
So that they're still not absolutely certain there'll be an election.
Mm. Is that the mood on the fringe you found?
Well, I was going to say, actually, I think the people who are really fighting for their seats aren't here. Certainly, I know one or two people who've not come because they want to make sure their campaigns are ready to go. This campaigning nowadays is so pre-planned and organised, and they have sort of these sort of tranches of things that they're going to unroll as the weeks go by. And there is turmoil that this has all been thrown out.
Mm.
You're quite right, debate in the main conference has very much been suppressed, and there's this great sort of appetite suddenly and rather overdue for unity. But on the fringe, you're still getting lots of very interesting ideas. These policy reviews, which have stored up the most intense problems for the leadership, to the extent you really wonder what he was doing, setting them up in the form in which he set them up, have also actually uncovered all sorts of really interesting thinking that's long overdue in politics and have been a real sort of breath of fresh air. But trying to find a path, a conservative path, through them and out of them is a project requiring years more work.
Yeah, so, and under the scrutiny of this week is really difficult. I mean, we'll come on to some of those issues in a moment, but George Osborne's speech on taxing the economy has been the really big event of the week. He announced a huge rise in the threshold for paying inheritance tax to £1 million, help for first-time buyers with the abolition of stamp duty on houses under £250,000, and an annual flat levy for non-domiciles. The Guardian's Martin Kettle blogged about it on Comment is Free.
I think Osborne did very well today. I think he steadied Tory fears, and I think he actually got some cheers. It was a pretty big achievement, and I think strategically it was an important moment. Next to him on the stage was the word aspiration, and aspiration is one of the key areas of the political battleground that the Tories have to make inroads in. In the 1980s, under Margaret Thatcher, the Tories were the party of aspiration and they triumphed. In the 1990s, Tony Blair seized aspiration from the Tories with the results that we know. Labour won 3 successive general elections. Now the battle is on for the politics of aspiration again. And what Osborne was able to do in what he said about first-time house buyers, stamp duty abolition, and also in terms of what he said about inheritance tax, really, I think, played to that aspirational aspect of the electoral battleground. And it's a very serious move, and it could be quite effective. So I think that Osborne politically did a very good job. He saw off the Labour attack, and I think he began to turn the attack onto Labour. Too early to say whether it's been successful, but it was very necessary from the Tory point of view that he did it today.
We are on your side
We are the party of aspiration.
Well, here are some of your thoughts you posted on Martin's blog.
This echoes old Tory policies somewhat. I do hope Labour don't implement these proposals. Whatever was mentioned about losing any ideological ties isn't completely true. The party is still rooted in social democracy, and raising inheritance tax to such a high level is morally wrong. The Labour Party shouldn't be about keeping the rich rich, unlike the seemingly pro-class gap Tories who seem to be promoting it.
Same old Tory rubbish with no real new ideas beyond looking after the chosen few. To win, they need to appeal to all groups, to which they failed. So 4 more years of Labour, sad day for all.
Osborne's speech was excellent, just what the Tories needed, in particular the pledge to lift thousands of decent, hard-working families out of reach of the unfair inheritance tax trap is great.
Abolishing the stamp duty will probably only serve to make typical first-time buyer properties 1% more expensive. Regarding inheritance tax, I've never heard of any homeowners complaining about rising house prices. So far as I'm concerned, they've no right to complain about paying tax on their lucky financial gains.
Have your say at commentisfree.co.uk. Why does this matter so much to Tories? Because it's not a cut in general taxation, is it? It's a cut in a very specific, quite limited bit of tax.
That's the great advantage of it. What it does, and what he's aiming to do, is to ease the anxiety of people who feel they may fall into taxation. They don't really know. People don't know what level inheritance tax might hit them. They're not quite sure what their property price is. But there's a fear, there's a sense of danger, of risk. And this, I think, plays very well as an answer to that risk, the sort of anxiety of middle England. Somebody stood up at the Guardian Fringe yesterday and said, I'm a part-time nurse, my husband's a retired police officer, I'm a councillor in somewhere in the south, I think Bromley. But these were not people who regarded themselves as rich, and they thought, we'll have to pay this tax. And they were delighted he's announced it's going.
Yes, I mean, Polly's attempt to yesterday to be rational about it and say only 6% of people pay this, it's not going to happen to most of you, it is the super rich in the end, just doesn't play, does it?
Yeah, I think Polly Toynbee, distinguished writer though she undoubtedly is, has a very tenuous link with the experience of ordinary, struggling, middle-class people. She has a very de haut en bas attitude to them, thinks that they're worries.
That's unfair.
I can assure you she has a very kind of attitude that their worries about everyday existence, paying the tax bill, paying the electricity bill, is beneath contempt because she's very grand.
Peter, let's stick to George, not to Polly.
I was making a political point here, because what her article showed yesterday, which she simply didn't understand, the central narrative of this conference, and the way in which the Tories must return to power, is by focusing on the middle-income people, the people you were talking about, Julian. But the central story of 10 years of Labour in power is that it has enriched the very rich beyond all measure and imagination, at the same time as creating a client underclass almost. But the people actually in the middle are being squeezed to death, and that is the point which the electorate is trying to get at.
There are lots of real people who, including me, who worry a lot about their children and their children's first houses and they're paying for the university and all of that. I know exactly what that's about. But there are also an awful lot of other people who aren't there. That's the point. Do you know what the average household income is in this country? It is £23,000 a year. That is not the kind of money.
An inheritance tax. They are not going to end up ever paying inheritance tax. Therefore, in the end, isn't it a tax break for the rich?
Well, that's Polly's attack on it. But for George Osborne, he has a different thing. As Peter says, he's trying to win an election. He's trying to mobilise Tory voters. He's trying to get people in this hall to feel that they're proud of David Cameron rather than anxious about him. And I think he's succeeded. It's certainly true that this party is not a party of redistribution. It's not a party of socialism. And there are people who, in the early period of Cameron, who rather fell in love because they were not so happy about Iraq and Labour, they began to fall in love with the Conservatives and believed it to be something it never was going to turn out to be. And now they want to criticise George Osborne for being a Conservative. Well, he always was a Conservative.
Do you think this is one of those messages that's the sort of the breakthrough out of the Tory voter into the broader country? It's a breakthrough message for the Tories to other voters.
I think it's a fascinating message for the Tories to be giving out, and I think it's a real challenge to Labour. I mean, in a way, politically, whether or not it works economically, the political symbol of being prepared to tax the super rich, something Labour has not dared to do
over the last...
I'm looking now at taxing the 250,000 people who live here earning huge amounts of money without paying any tax. It seems to me a terrific...
But on top of that, we get into this game of do sums add up, and during elections people write wise articles saying they do or they don't. I mean, no government sums ever add up, so it's slightly disingenuous of the Labour Party to say the Conservative plans don't make sense, because the government ends up borrowing money too.
Comment is free from the Conservative Conference.
I'm Jenny Russell, and I'm going to be writing for Comment is Free about the Tories' theme here, which is a broken society. And the really interesting thing about coming here, having been coming to Tory conferences for 15 years, is how their analysis of what's wrong with society has now come so close to that of Labour. I mean, it used to be that 15 years ago, the two parties had entirely different perspectives. The Tories used to think that if you're poor, it's basically because it was all your fault, you're probably lazy, and since they had damn well pulled themselves up by their bootstraps, you should have done the same. And Labour used to say, well, it's all the poor's fault and we ought to give them lots of support, and really these people just need state aid and they're going to be fine. Now what's so fascinating is that both these parties have shifted towards a much greater common ground. And so that you had analysis from the platform today about what's gone wrong in society, which is basically saying that people are trapped by their circumstances, and that when people are poor and when they're living in dire conditions on council estates, it's often because of intergenerational disadvantage, and that people are absolutely trapped by their educations, their expectations, the gangs around them, the fact that they can't find jobs, and that these things are not a matter of moral failing, which is the way the Tories used to see them. Fundamentally, they're all preaching from the same script. They both want to see mixes of state and voluntary sector. They both want to see some private companies perhaps getting people into work. They both agree that you can no longer simply impose big programs from above. You've got to start involving local people who are passionate about local communities, who can offer local solutions. And try as we will at The Guardian to allege that there are still huge and substantial differences between them, these are just nothing like those of the past. They're just getting closer and closer in their understanding of the complexities of social problems.
For the best online debate, go to commentisfree.co.uk.
Rather more hardline distinctions will come from David Davis, the Shadow Home Secretary, today, but the inequality theme has been echoed in many fringe events, including The Guardian debate. All three panellists, Oliver Letwin, Polly Toynbee and Greg Clark, talked about it.
There remains stubbornly this large group of people excluded, trapped, alienated.
We are living through a time of amazing runaway wealth at the top. You know, it is powered by globalisation. It is quite difficult to know how it might be controlled.
After 10 years of Labour government, there were more people in severe poverty than when they took office. The fact that there are 400,000 more people in severe poverty at the end of 10 years, I think, is extraordinary.
And when you wrote about this on Comment is Free for us, you talked about the Tories rediscovering poverty. What did you mean by that?
The idea for the debate was that the Tories have picked up Polly's view of society as an interconnected caravan moving through the desert, rather than the Churchillian idea of society being a ladder up which you could climb and from which, if you slipped, there would be a safety net. It's rather convoluted, but it is a completely different approach. It's the approach that motivated Disraeli, so it's not a completely new Tory idea. But it does, as Jenny was indicating, I mean, it has taken them into wholly new territory, and it appears to be leading them to new solutions. What is not clear, and what perhaps because of the pressure of an impending election is stopping emerging, is a clear and defined set of answers to these problems.
There is more unease here than I found last week in the Labour conference inequality, isn't there?
There's an interest in it and a concern about it and much discussion, but there is also a fundamental difference still, I think, with Labour, which is this is part of Conservative distrust of the state. Labour feels the state is the answer to inequality. The Conservative Party,
but I think
citing the evidence of the last decade, begin to think the state is perhaps in some way almost a cause or an engineer of it.
I think what's happened is that Labour is also beginning to realise that top-down solutions don't always work.
Except that Gordon Brown didn't give any impression of that in his speech.
By the way, I've listened to your conversation and also listened to Jenny Russell, and I don't recognise... I recognise some of what Julian's just said, that there is a different view about the state. And I don't think you've got the point, actually. I don't think you've been listening or watching. Julian has a bit. The Tory solution is to say the reason why this has all happened is because we've had this terrible collapse of family life. in the last two generations, owing very largely to progressive social agendas. And only if you can rebuild family structures will you get away from these desperate problems. Otherwise, young kids join gangs, they lose all contact with any ordinary codes of conduct or morality, and you get terrible things like the Rhys Jones episode, which is where the Cameron reacted far more profoundly than Labour did and Gordon Brown did, I thought, and that's because he has this body of analysis.
But Jenny's surely right, isn't she, Anne? They are saying things this week that you wouldn't have heard it in the last...
Yes, I think that is right. I mean, I agree with Peter that the Tories are now do put and have always put the family absolutely at the centre of this. I think that you always have to look at the analysis of the problem. Why has the family broken down? What has damaged the family? This is where the analysis, I think, would differ.
Yes.
Because I think people on the left would argue that poverty has been as significant a contributor to the breakdown and destruction of families as has state intervention.
The central core Tory analysis is that state intervention is creating a situation where families are destroyed, basically because the new tax credit system and some of the things which Thatcher and Major have done before means that it's disastrous. It actually forces couples apart. That is the difference and analysis between Tory and Labour. So I didn't understand the word that Jenny Russell was saying.
But Peter, Labour has recovered from feeling that it's intruding in private matters to avoid saying that two-parent families are best, and they've been saying that for some years now.
That has been the cynical sort of Brown attempt to appeal to middle-class voters. Desperately cynical, never backed by any policy at all. Come on.
The Conservative policies. But also,
I think it's quite extraordinary that you suppose people do or don't stay together on the basis of a tax break.
A very small one as well. And this
argument from New Labour people and Guardian people is so wonderful. You spend the rest of your time devising taxes in order to engineer the way people behave, and you create an exception for the family, which apparently is not affected by this thing.
Well, we asked the posters on Commenters Free to give us some questions to put into that debate, and the chairman, Michael White, did feed in one that actually made it into the news.
I'm going to take one of these from the Commenters Free questions, which seems to be relevant, and we've not really touched upon it. What are you going to do about inner-city crime, specifically the supply and distribution of illegal drugs?
Oliver Letwin's answer was a little surprising for a party that is trying to show it hasn't gone soft on crime.
The person who's on what is probably a cocktail of alcohol and then cannabis and amphetamines and heroin is the victim, not the miscreant, but the victim. It may lead to misdeeds, but it is, as a state of affairs, a state of being a victim. The pusher is the person who is the cause, the most direct cause. But many of the pushers are also, actually, as well as miscreants, victims, because they themselves are parts of pyramids in which they are both users and sellers. And in the end, all the efforts that this government has made, and I have to say that other governments have made, to cut back on supply of, as I think the question said, how do we deal with supply of drugs in inner cities, to cut back on supply, have not worked. Now, I don't mean that we can desist from those efforts, but actually, we have to attend to the demand side of the equation.
But, I mean, I find it amazing to hear a Tory politician giving that kind of analysis. And going back to our previous discussion, doesn't this show how far the Tories have shifted?
Well, that's Planet Letwin. It's not necessarily Tory policy. And I think if you talk to David Davis, you'd get a different answer. I think he spoke very well there. I agree with him. And it's quite a contrast to the Prime Minister last week simply saying, we will not decriminalise drugs, and then not even moving on from that. There's a Conservative awareness of that problem. He's correct. But what will the party do? David Cameron, one of the first things he did in politics on the Home Affairs Select Committee was push very hard for a report that led to the downgrading of cannabis. David Blunkett paid tribute in the House to Cameron's efforts in persuading the Conservative Party on that. They're now quite scared. I think that drugs are a difficult territory for the party to go much further than that. They couldn't analyse the problem. They don't have much of a solution.
I mean, it's Planet Letwin, and it made it into the papers. Does that worry David Cameron, do you think, that...
Well, I think that the Oliver Letwin, by the way, is, I think, a wonderful politician. He's an enormous ornament to British public life, a man of huge intellectual integrity. He's very unusual, and real brains. It's lovely. I celebrate Oliver Letwin. But I think the press has constructed a false paradox here. There's no real contradiction between saying that we're going to punish drug dealers and that these are the victims.
I think focusing on harm reduction, though, especially if it did make it into party policy, would be much to be welcomed.
I'm sure it would make it into party policy. I don't think it's a completely uncontroversial thing.
It has been government policy through successive governments.
Never adequately or sustainably funded. That's right. The problem. If they were really to do that, then they might make a difference.
Well, Commenters Free readers responded enthusiastically to the opportunity to post their questions on the site. They asked, in addition to that one, how the party will appeal more to young female voters, about the regulation of the financial markets, discrimination against unmarried couples, and, of course, the issue of Europe.
I want to ask David Cameron, what will he do about Britain's relationship with the European Union?
Who are the Conservatives closer to in their thinking on Europe at the moment, Ted Heath or Margaret Thatcher?
What he should say is that he demands a referendum on the new EU constitution.
Where exactly are the Tories on Europe at the moment?
It's very interesting. They've definitely sharpened up. They've William Hague's speech to the conference was hardened up the line. It's a very fruitful line for the Conservatives going into an election, and the call for a European referendum is quite popular. It embarrasses Gordon Brown. He'd rather have that. He'd rather be on the side of a referendum himself. He's a place he doesn't want to be. And in terms of getting support from the Sun, for instance, it's a nice place for Conservatives.
But they need to balance that, because the danger is the Conservative Party suddenly looks like it's obsessed with its old interests, the things that like to divide them, the things that they talked about constantly as they lost elections. So they can use this to their advantage. They've done very well with the Sun, doing very well with the Mail. But they mustn't do it too much. They mustn't look obsessed, which is why William Hague can say it more easily than David Cameron. If David Cameron says this and it gets reported, other things he might have said
but
don't.
But they have quite successfully pushed it onto the issue of consent, isn't it? It's not about the EU per se, it's about consent, which is quite clever.
Although I think if it came to a referendum, then you'd reopen all the arguments about exactly what the terms of the referendum were. I think that's one of the interesting questions that Gordon Brown is mulling over. Will an election now look, or could it be hijacked and turned into a referendum? Or is that a way of actually quashing the argument for good? I'm not quite sure.
A risk for the Conservative Party is also that many people here, not everybody, would quite like to leave the European Union. And for some of them, a referendum is an excuse to talk about the issue. They tend to go a little further.
I don't think this is a canard, which is the left produces regularly. David Miliband said in his wretched speech at the Labour conference last week, made the claim that the Tories want divorce from Europe, has no evidence of any kind that that's true. And there's a sort of interesting piece of lefty dogma that the Tories want out of Europe, which is endlessly reiterated, not true. And what is interesting, though, is Cameron has been quite consistent on this area. He's open to the accusation. The accusation he's made is drifting the party to the right. Actually, he's simply being consistent with what he said in his election campaign for the leadership.
That's certainly true of Cameron. It's not true of everybody.
Comment is free from the Conservative Conference.
My name is Tony Juniper. I'm the director of Friends of the Earth. I'm in Blackpool this week campaigning on climate change. I've just written a piece for Comment is Free about what's going on here. And really the question for us right now is whether we can keep the Conservatives strong on the climate change question in the next crucial few months, when this country will be debating whether we're going to have a really strong law on climate change here or a really mediocre law on the subject. And the Conservatives have actually been very important in this process, and I think for a long time they've had a reputation, partly deserved, for being not very keen on environmental issues and not being very serious about the subject. Under David Cameron, that changed, and they have been a real political force here in driving New Labour to adopt more ambitious plans than otherwise would have been the case. Now, the next few months are going to be key. If the Conservatives can maintain the energy and momentum they had on this, we could finish up with some really worthwhile legislation. If they back off, I fear the government will also back off. And I think David Cameron really has got a big job to do here in keeping his party solid. One of the key kind of battlegrounds for Conservative policy going forward is really the choice that Cameron and his senior people have in choosing whether they're going to adopt the John Gummer, Zach Goldsmith approach towards environmental issues, looking at some of the economic fundamentals and how we can align questions like carbon emissions with how we're going to develop the economy, or whether the party will go with the John Redwood, very traditional deregulatory growth at any cost approach towards global competitiveness. And if we go one way, then I fear that the environmental agenda would suffer badly. And David Cameron really needs to be showing some leadership here, because if he is serious about green issues, he does need to be picking up many of the proposals that were in the quality of life review that came from Zach Goldsmith and Gummer. But people like George Osborne here are talking quite openly about how they are dismissing some of these views. And I think he's talking for quite a lot of the party, unfortunately. And David Cameron is going to be a real leader, taking the party in a different direction. He's going to have to stand up to this.
Has anyone seen Zach Goldsmith this week? He's not turned up Where's to any that? Of his fringes. But, I mean, the more serious point is this an election thing, that actually green stuff is going to be gently ditched?
I think that this is a very, very important moment for Cameron. He really has to show leadership here. He has put... He is right to have identified climate change as one of the great issues of our age, the greatest problem facing us. And if he bottles it here, I think he will destroy himself morally as a politician.
And we don't know what he's going to do. I suspect he has slightly bottled it. The speech we had from George Osborne yesterday, though it went down very well in many ways, made a passing reference to the report. It praised the report, and you knew as soon as he praised it that he was burying it. And he proposed only one green tax, which is a tax that the Liberal Democrats also proposed, to slightly alter the detail of aviation duty, which is a small thing. I think the party is running away from this issue. I think it's a pity. David Cameron might just do it tomorrow, but I don't get the sense he will.
Let's not write him off. But I think if he did bottle it and went down the Redwood growth at all costs agenda, I think he would. He might win himself some votes, but I think he would. A lot of the accusations made against him that he's all things to all men are false and politically motivated. But if he were to run away from the green agenda here, I think he would be very vulnerable to a charge of political emptiness.
But how does he get around the fact that people do hold these two completely contradictory ideas in their head, that something has to be done about global warming, but please, could it not be supermarket car park taxes or domestic air flight taxes or anything that actually changes the way they behave?
Yeah, so this is not a uniquely conservative problem.
No, absolutely not. No, it is a human problem.
And my own thought is that the purpose of political leadership is to effect great changes for the good in society. Cameron, if he were to win do well in an election by selling down the river what he told us earlier were his fundamental beliefs, would do himself great damage.
It's a question of timing, isn't it? I mean, there's no point in being defeated on an argument before you've had a chance to win support for it.
Yeah, and that's why Julian is absolutely right. I mean, it's you know, the educational process of the party, he was entitled to think only a few months ago that he had 3 years to do that, and now he's got a few days to do that.
Well, David Cameron's big speech is tomorrow, and he's been told all week that it has to be the performance of his life. Commenters Free posters are in no doubt about what he has to do.
Cameron's policies thus far are not lurching to the right at all. How is cutting inheritance tax and ending the litigation culture in schools right wing?
My main worry is lack of representation and a coherent opposition. We've seen in recent years how the Labour government has pushed through unpopular policy due to its massive majority in Parliament. The Tories are a complete shower, unable to tell their arse from their elbows. So desperate for victory, they jump onto any bandwagon, try and get with the kids and talk to us like an embarrassing dad who thinks he knows best, but doesn't, patronising and wrong.
The fundamental problem the Tory party has at the moment is the lack of a recognisable political philosophy.
If the party I've supported and been a member of for over 40 years doesn't stop farting about and rally behind Cameron, it will cease to exist as a viable alternative government.
Have your say at commentersfree.co.uk.
So, what does he have to do tomorrow? What should be in that speech?
I think what he should do is not go for the usual party conference speech. The usual conference speech is to tick every issue, to go through little mention of Iraq, bit of climate change, bit of this, bit of that. Brown strayed into that territory. I think Cameron should just be a bit sharper. He should say, this is what I'm doing, this is why I'm here. He should pick up on a few things, maybe climate change, and talk in some detail. I think he should give a much more explanatory speech about his purpose. I don't think he needs to just run through the traditional thing, bash the other parties, get everybody cheering and go home.
The Tories have got a fantastic and actually very well-developed offer, as political analysts say, on women and the family. They've got fantastic proposals on equal pay, gone further than Labour's ever managed to go, and they've also gone, having been so cautious for so long about family-friendly working and flexible working policies, they've also come out wholeheartedly for those. I think, as Julian says, within the context of what he's for and what he's trying to achieve, he could easily enumerate some of those policies or policy proposals very successfully.
Central thought for him?
Yeah, I very agree with both of you, actually. I think that it's rather important he's not panicked into endless and policy announcements. The modern political speech at party conferences is a very debased thing now. And Gordon Brown's last week was the most unattractive production, I thought. So cynically calculated to appeal to Tory voters in a way which came over to me as extremely inauthentic. And I think that Cameron has to show that he's authentic. And he doesn't do that by ticking every box, as Julian says, or by coming out with sort of snazzy announcements. I think he has to tell us why it is, what it is about conservatism and Toryism, which is deeply and profoundly important for the everyday lives of British people.
Well, Tim Montgomery from the influential website Conservative Home is blogging for us today on what the grassroots think, and I think his main thought is that Cameron needs to show the party he loves them. But let us know what you think by reading his blog and commenting on it. And that's it from our Comment is Free podcast from the Conservative Party conference. There'll be more coverage of the conference on the Guardian website, including more blogs from across the political spectrum on Comment is Free. And many thanks to my panellists, Anne Perkins, Julian Glover and Peter Obon. I'm Georgina Henry, and the programme was produced by Francesca Panetta.
You've been listening to Comment is Free from the Conservative conference. Continue the debate online at commentisfree.co.uk.
Guardian Unlimited.